I know a lot of you are kind of tired of big market teams signing players to long-term deals, but two of the biggest market teams are playing footsie with players they can't afford to lose. If you're a big market team and you can afford to sign your stars, here's an idea. Do it.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. If you're watching me on the YouTubes, you can see right there. Please, I'm imploring you, call me Sully. This is your first listen. And if it is, thank you very much. We're available on all your free podcasting catchers. If you want to follow us on Twitter, follow us on Podcast Locked On MLB Pods. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball. Yeah, that's it. Sully Baseball on Twitter. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Make sure to tell your smart device to play Podcast Locked On MLB, or, ask it to play one of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Yankees with the fabulous Stacey Katsoulias, who is the unbelievably great podcaster, who was the one who dragged me into this whole lockdown world, and I'm always thankful for her. Hey, this is being dropped on the 18th day of May. We're creeping closer and closer to Memorial Day weekend, which is, in my opinion, the unofficial first checkpoint of the season. I understand we started the season a little late this year, so it's not really – Memorial Day is usually the one-third mark of the season. It's not quite going to be this, but it is a good time to take stock of where you are as a team. Now, and by the way, I can't stress this enough. How great is it that we have a season, a full 162-game season? Remember, it was about 2 months ago we thought we were going to maybe lose the season. And we're talking baseball. There are wild, weird games are going on here. The Cleveland-Cincinnati game, where Cincinnati won 5-4 in 10 innings, but they needed to strike out Jose Ramirez with the bases loaded. You had the Mets rally to tie the game against the St. Louis Cardinals on a pass ball third strike, which eventually led to the game-tying rally. The Cardinals would win that game. That would be a split doubleheader. The Mets took the first one 3-1. Dominic Smith got the big hit in that. Tyler O'Neill got the game-winning hit in the nightcap. Other big games include Kevin Kiermaier and the Rays clobbered the Tigers. You had Jesus Sanchez and the Marlins beat up the Nationals 5-1. The Padres, look out for the Padres, looking to win that division with Bob Melvin at the helm. Trent Grisham got an RBI double. And Robinson Cano, what do you know? Robbie Cano joined the San Diego Padres, got an RBI single. Watch them have a great second half of the season. The Blue Jays, led by my pick to win the American League Cy Young Award, which was Jose Berríos, who's actually off to a terrible start, but he pitched 7 shutout innings. And Springer got a bases-clearing triple in the second. That was all the scoring in that game as the Mariners won that one 3-0. There are some games that are still going on right now. But that was just, looking around the league and some of the games that were happening. I'm going to bring up both the Red Sox and the Yankees in just a minute. Hey, the Braves are maybe starting to show a little bit of life. They wound up shutting out the Brewers 3-3. Pirates can't hit, can't score. Can't hit, can't score. What can you do? Going a little adamant on you. The Cubs shut them out 7-0. I did a quick cameo on Locked On Pirates with Ethan Smith, and we had a lot of fun talking about what they should do moving forward. Okay, I'm going to bring up the Yankees beat the Orioles 5-4. It was a close game, but we sometimes live in a binary world. Yeah, it was probably closer than it should have been. Doesn't matter. Yankees won. If you're a Yankee fan, you don't really care about that. At one point in the game, Judge narrowly missed hitting a home run. He said, okay, here's the deal. I'll hit two more. Judge had quite a day. He went 4 for 5, 2 home runs, 3 runs batted in. He scored on both of the home runs, obviously. And it was and King was, again, incredible. He let up a double at one point and then struck out the next 3 batters. Chapman got the save, but they got a good performance out of Taillon, and Judge is just playing at a different level. The Red Sox the other day beat the Astros. They did not beat the Astros today. In fact, the Astros hit 5 home runs in the second inning. 5 home runs in one inning. It was 9-1 after 2. That's not very good. The Astros got home runs from Alvarez, 2 from Tucker. They got 1 from Pena. They got 1 from Brantley. They got 1 from Gurriel. You know, Eovaldi just got shelled. And he's had a weird year because he's had some days this season where he just looked unbelievably great. The fact that his ERA is over 4 shows he's had some games where he stinks. Tonight was a stinks. Now, the Red Sox actually got some hits. It actually, if you were following the game, it looked like it could have been one of those crazy, like, 13-12 games because the Astros got 15 hits and scored 13 runs. The Red Sox scored 4 runs. They had 13 hits. They should have had more than 4 runs, but that's kind of been the story of the Red Sox this year, hasn't it? And the Red Sox have been in a position where they have been able to get some decent pitching a lot of the nights and some hits, but they've not been able to get, for the most part, the big hit. J.D. Martinez had a really good game. He's having a terrific year so far. And he wound up homering. He got 3 hits. Devers is unbelievable. He went 3 for 4 with a home run. Birthday boy Verdugo got a couple of hits. Story got a couple of hits. Looks like he's starting to turn things around. But, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr. still can't hit. Franchi Cordero still can't hit. And Bogarts did not have a great day. He did walk, but he didn't have a great day. And by the end of the day, he was sitting in the whirlpool. But right now, I'm just looking at these, the Red Sox, and if you had told me at the beginning of the year that they were going to have issues with their bats, not the pitching staff, I would have thought you were crazy. I think maybe a big part of it has to do a little bit with Kiki Hernandez not pulling his weight. I mean, remember how unbelievable he was in the postseason last year. But I think they need a batter in there to spark this team. I would reach into the farm. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. Reach into your farm and see who the best players you have there and give them a shot right now, because this team needs a shot in the arm and a kick in the pants. They got 13 hits today. How many did they leave on base? 13 left on base. They were 2 for 14 with runners in scoring position. 2 for 14. If they batted, you know, I mean, a couple more hits there, you know, I mean, it was 9-3 at one point. And then the Astros won another big run, and they made it 13-3. And by that point, everyone was just on autopilot. But there are games, and we've all seen games. In fact, this is the anniversary of that wild 23-22 game where Mike Schmidt hit all those home runs and Kingman hit all those home runs between Philadelphia and Chicago at Wrigley Field. This could have been one of those types of games. Instead, it wasn't. And the Astros wound up winning, and pending what happens in the Angels game, where, surprise, Mike Trout hit the go-ahead home run, they took the lead right now. We're going to see who has the lead in the American League West. If the Angels hold on to the score, they'll be tied right there. The White Sox lost that game earlier tonight, and the Twins won. So, man, it's weird. The Twins are still holding on to this first-place lead. And the Red Sox are thankful that the Orioles are on a 5-game losing streak right now, because they are not in the cellar. But as it turns out, they're still playing sub-400 ball. Red Sox obviously have had years where they've been really good and years where they've been really bad. But if this is one of those years where it's really bad, I don't want them taking the route of waving the white flag on a star player like they've done from time to time. They need to get some. They need to put out some applications to get the right player on this team right now, get him the right job, and do the job well. And you know what? Maybe they should go to LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs is here to make it easy to find the people you want to talk to faster and free for your small business. Create a job post in minutes on LinkedIn Jobs to reach your network and beyond to the world's largest professional network of 810 million people, including your pal Sully. Add your job with a purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. Spread the word that you're hiring so your network can help you find the right people. Simple tool screening questions makes it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the candidates you really want to talk to faster. Did you know that nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnMLB. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnMLB to post your job for free. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. Thanks so much for making Locked On MLB your first listen. For your next listen, check out the Locked On Now podcast. Recaps of Major League Baseball games with analysis from our local experts. Taking fans through the season like no other network, free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Xander Bogaerts, his contract is coming up. He's not going to be a free agent for a few years, but there's a lot of speculation that Bogaerts could be on the trade block. He's played for the Red Sox for 10 seasons. Really, only part of 2013. He only played 18 regular season games, but I'm including that because he started in the World Series. He got himself a World Series ring for his troubles, and so I'm going to count that. He should be a Red Sox for life. Multiple All-Star games, Silver Slugger, got some MVP votes here and there. He gets big home runs. He has decent speed. He plays good defense, and he has two World Series rings for the three-time All-Star. What are we doing if you're a Red Sox to think that this guy could potentially be on the trade block? Pay the man. Keep him there. He's already signed. He's already signed through. I mean, he has option. He's a vesting option for 26. Why is there talk about trading him? I understand that was like some insurance that maybe the Trevor Story hiring could allow it to happen. Maybe you can get some good prospects for him. But are we going through this again if you're a Red Sox fan? A homegrown player? Helps him win the World Series. This guy helped him win two. Wants to play for the Red Sox. Is a solid player. And then, but there's this, that, the other thing. And like John Lester, like Mookie Betts, off he goes. I'm sorry. I'm still a little peeved about the Mookie Betts thing because he should be the right fielder for the Red Sox forever. And it didn't work out that way. The Red Sox are a big market team. They could keep the Bogaerts contract, sign Rafael Devers, and they could have kept Mookie Betts. Don't give me any nonsense that was out of the question. Of course they could do that. They print money in Boston. Yeah, they got Verdugo in the trade for Mookie Betts. I'd rather have Mookie Betts if you're a Red Sox fan. It's ridiculous. If you're a big market team, act like it. This is a homegrown player who's helped bring multiple World Series titles to Boston. Why can't he be a Red Sox for life? Why is that so out of the question? And on that same situation, there's another big market team that has a player who is basically putting his team on his shoulders, and that's Aaron Judge, who can be a free agent after this year. Now, he has played seven seasons. This is his seventh season with the Yankees. Obviously, he won the Rookie of the Year in 2017, where he hit those 52 home runs. He leads the league in home runs this year. He's got 14 of them already. And he is now, he is 30. He's not as young as you think he is because he came up relatively. I mean, he came up as a, when he won the Rookie of the Year, he was 25. But how is there any question of what to get for Aaron Judge? What is the thought process here? The Yankees aren't going to trade him, right? They're not going to trade him. There's no blockbuster deal involving Aaron Judge coming out. Because first of all, there's no way they'd be able to get the market value for him. And he means too much to this team. And so if they let him walk via free agency, what is going on here? Why are the Yankees even playing any amount of footsie with Aaron Judge in terms of signing him to a long-term deal? He is the face of the Yankees. He should be one of the biggest superstars in baseball. This should be an absolute no-brainer. And I'm telling you something, the Red Sox-Yankee rivalry is kind of sort of dormant, even though they've played each other in the postseason in both 2018 and last year. So you'd think it would have a little bit of a jolt, but it really hasn't been able to do that. I think one way it could wake up is if you keep some of the stars in place. Betts with the Red Sox and Judge with the Yankees could have created a great who has the better right fielder rivalry between the two teams. But no, the Red Sox wanted to save $7.43. Well, now the Red Sox can put together an infield and some of the homegrown players in there, including Devers and Bogarts. Once you start having players with that kind of identity with the team, you got to be able to put that together and keep them. If you're the Yankees, you're a big market squad. You got to act like it. You can't let Aaron Judge, even for a nanosecond, think about going elsewhere. Why don't you just offer him everything now? Offer him. Because look it, the Yankees' window of opportunity is right now. And before you say Yankees win every year, they haven't been in a World Series since 2009. Okay? There is a little bit of a sense of urgency with this Yankee team. A window of opportunity has opened up for this year in a bigger way than I thought it ever was going to. I had tons of doubts with this Yankee club. I did not pick him to go to the playoffs, not because I'm born and raised a Red Sox fan. I didn't pick the Red Sox either. But I didn't trust their pitching staff. But as I brought up the other day, a lot of those question marks have turned into exclamation points. And leading the way is Aaron Judge as the offensive power of this team. He's the person who sparks the team. He's the person who is the face of the team. He's the person who, when Yankee fans think of the team, he is the one that they identify. Has the great name, the great nickname, all the people in the Judge's robes. Why is there even a second where this guy isn't solved, isn't signed to a long-term deal? 7-8 year deal. Then he'll be 38. Do you know what? You get all of his good years. You get all of his good years, and then you let him take those victory laps. Aaron Judge will probably have number 99 in Monument Park retired if he plays long enough and helps deliver a World Series title. Now, same thing I thought was going to happen to Alex Rodriguez, but it's a different story altogether. When you have the Red Sox and the Yankees starting to play, well, I don't know what we're going to do. What are we going to do? Should we trade him? Should we save some money? We can slip Story in there. Well, I don't know. I mean, he may not have the right that. What? Do you think Judge is going to be an elite player next year? Probably. Do you think he's going to be an elite player the year after that? Yeah, probably. What about the year after that? Yeah, probably. So do you pay for a bunch of his bad years? Well, guess what, Yankee fans? On those elite years, let's take it 2017. In 2017, he made the rookie salary that he made $544,000. He made $600,000 in 2019. So you got some of those great production years from him when he was, without the big money. So maybe to tip the scales the correct way, you have 2 or 3 years where you're paying for his, you're paying for his services, where he may not be the huge superstar, but you know what? It'll even out. The Yankees can't go two decades without going to the World Series. They can't. And right now, we're in the third year of this decade. They went the entire last decade without playing in a single World Series. And now they have the star to build the team around. And he's not signed for the long term. I don't understand the mentality here. And I'm saying this as a baseball fan, not as a Yankee hater or a Red Sox fan or whatever like that. Baseball is better when the Yankees are good and easy to root against. When they have a big, huge star that scares the pants off you. Like, oh, I don't know, Aaron Judge. And he's a homegrown Yankee. Those are the ones who are the most loved. That's why Yankee fans can't stop talking about Bernie and Jeter and Pettit and Posada and Rivera and going back to Mattingly. And that's why Munson was a real Yankee and all blah, 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 blah. Judge fits into that perfectly. Why isn't he signed to a long-term deal? It makes zero sense to me. Zero. And do you know what? If the Yankees don't do that, then they are just going to be seeing a lot of their energy just float away because they won't have the player who can give them that spark that Judge had. No matter how many Built Bars they eat. And do you know what? Built Bars are the best tasting protein bars out there. I just had my birthday cake puff for my birthday, and it is fantastic. You haven't tried the puffs? I'll let you in on a little bit of a secret, because that's what friends do. A chocolate-covered marshmallow protein bar. That's what it is. You heard me. Delicious. I can't even say it. Flavored marshmallow covered and 100% real chocolate. That's the puffs. Make every day your birthday with Built's birthday cake puffs. Built Bar has taken delicious experience and biting into a fresh slice of birthday cake and brought it 100% white chocolate, added sprinkles. 130 calories, 16 grams of protein, only 9 grams of sugar. This limited time offer is an amazing option if you're looking for a healthy way to get flavor and variety in your day. All Built Puffs are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means with Built, you get to eat healthy and enjoy yourself while you do it. And they're made with collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently. Provides tons of health benefits. Go to Built.com, get the birthday cake puff now. Go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. Use promo code LOCK15, get 15% off at Built.com. Sometimes I look at World Series of the past, and I kind of, there's sometimes we have lost opportunities. Like there's some World Series I wish we got to see. I know that sounds weird, but there's sometimes I look back at it, I wish we didn't have this one, we had that. I wish this matchup happened instead. And I mean, the most obvious one, and we'll never be able to have this matchup with the same meaning, was to have the Cubs play the Red Sox in 2003. That would have been the most incredible matchup of any World Series ever. And the Cubs could still play the Red Sox in a World Series, but it will never have the meaning that it would have had in 2003, because both the Red Sox and the Cubs were facing a drought, a curse. And you had Fenway, you had Wrigley, you had all the storied curse. The closest we ever got to that was when the Indians played the Cubs. And, of course, we all saw what happened in that World Series. And those two franchises that were desperate for a World Series title, and the Cubs wound up getting it. But imagine Curse of the Bambino, Curse of the Billy Goat, Wrigley, Fenway, Sammy Sosa, Ortiz and Ramirez and Pedro. It would have been, you could have put that on pay-per-view. That's how incredible that matchup would have been. Now, as it turns out, both of the teams would have won, winning a World Series. And so if they face each other, yeah, it'd be great to see Wrigley and Fenway, but it wouldn't have the same meaning. I was thinking about World Series that I wish we saw. And I came across 1997. Now, 1997 was a very strange World Series. The Marlins were only a five-year-old team, and they pushed all their chips in the center of the table, and they bought a bunch of stars. Kevin Brown, Gary Sheffield, Bobby Bonilla. Actually, Sheffield had been there a couple of years, but they acquired, Devon White, Bobby Bonilla, a bunch of players who they just brought in, Alex Fernandez, Moises Alou, to just come in and try to win. And then the owner knew he was going to sell the team. Huizenga knew he was going to sell the team. So it was just try to win this year and call it a day. And they were playing Cleveland, who was on an amazing streak of playoff runs in the 90s. Arguably the worst team they put on during that run was the 1997 team, but that was a team that got to within two outs, actually technically one out, of winning the World Series in 1997. And they blew the lead in Game 7 of the World Series, and then there was, sadly, a Tony Fernandez error, sadly because he was such a great player that part of his legacy was committing an error in the 11th inning of Game 7 of the World Series, which led to Edgar Renteria's single up the middle. The Marlins won. And one of the reasons why it was so strange, you had a lot of veterans who won their only World Series ring. Darren Dalton, Jim Eisenreich, Kevin Brown, Bobby Bonilla, Moises Alou, a bunch of these stars who won their only ring as a member of the Marlins. And Jim Leland won his only ring as the manager of the Marlins. And yet it did not build anything in terms of the fan base because the team was totally torn down. And by the next year, they bore no resemblance to the team that won the World Series. And a World Series championship could not be used to build up anything resembling a fan base, which is just bizarre. Of course, the Indians could have won the World Series. It would have taken Cleveland off the hook, would have given that great run, that crown jewel, and would have given Cleveland a championship a good, what, almost 20 years before LeBron James delivered it with the Cavaliers in 2016. There was a World Series matchup that I wish we saw, kind of like that Cubs Red Sox when we didn't talk. I wish we saw it in 1997 instead of the Marlins and Cleveland. And that matchup would have been the Giants and the Mariners. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. The Giants won the National League West in 1997. The Mariners won the American League West in 1997. The Marlins wound up sweeping the Giants, and it was stupid how the playoffs were set up then. That the Marlins, even though they were the wild card team, had home field advantage the first two games. It was 2-3 is how it went. And so the Marlins, even though they were, you know, the wild card club, were able to have two walk-off wins and then a come-from-behind win in Game 3. And the Mariners wound up losing to Baltimore in four games. And bizarrely, Randy Johnson lost both of his starts. Did not pitch particularly well in Game 1. And then lost the duel with Mike Mussina in Game 4. And so the Giants and the Mariners in 1997 are not necessarily remembered as postseason teams because they didn't get very far in that year's playoffs. Had they met in the World Series, however, I think it would have been not only transcendent, but it may have changed the direction of a superstar who was... things just started going out of control shortly afterwards. Now, think about, first of all, if you're a Giants fan, and the Giants have gone on to win a slew of World Series, and the Giants fans, believe me, love those teams, the Posies, Lincecums, Bumgarners, Sandoval, Matt Cain, all those players beloved by the Giants. The San Francisco Giants had not won a World Series at that point in 1997, and they were still playing in Candlestick. There was no World Series championship in Candlestick. For a lot of Giant fans, there's a soft spot in their heart for the stick because you had to be a real fan to go to that ballpark. The Mariners were still playing in the Kingdom, and they were being managed by Lou Piniella. A World Series championship by Lou Piniella would have made him one of those few managers to win a World Series in both leagues. At that time, it would have been only he and Sparky Anderson. A World Series championship for the Giants would have meant that title for Dusty Baker. Get that out of the way quick. Now, you would have had Barry Bonds on that Giants team. Now, Bonds did not win the MVP in 1997. Larry Walker did. But one look at Bonds' stats, and this was trim Bonds. This was not inflated Bonds yet. You like home runs? He hit 40. You like RBIs? He hit 101. You like stolen bases? He stole 37 bases. Like batting averages, he batted 291. Do you like OPS? It was 1.031 as he had 145 walks that year. Now, there are other players on that team like the JT Snows and the Jeff Kents and the Bill Millers and the Sean Esteses and the Rod Becks of the world who are beloved by Giant fans. But to have this Bonds, trim Bonds, not inflated Bonds, still leading the league in walks, still a legitimate gold glove winner who somehow only finished fifth in that year's MVP race. To have that Bonds be the person who represented the Giants in the World Series in Candlestick Park with Dusty Baker at the helm. Sort of, for the lack of a better word, redeeming the 1993 team who had a division title stolen from them because of geographical stupidity. They won 103 games, but they had to share the West with Atlanta. Never made sense, and there you go. The 97 Mariners had Ken Griffey Jr. in his MVP season when he hit 56 home runs and had an OPS, at a Bonzian 1.028. This was a stacked Hall of Fame-laden team. Edgar Martinez, also was a hitting machine, home runs left and right. You also had Randy Johnson as, elite, 291 strikeouts in 213 innings and a 2.28 ERA. You also had Jamie Moyer. You had Randy Johnson throwing the ball like thunder, and you had Jamie Moyer who couldn't break a pane of glass with his pitches. You also have Jeff Fassero, lest we forget. He was a 234-inning pitcher. And you had, it's a really good 1-2-3 punch in their rotation. Guess who you also had? Oh, you had Jay Buhner, much to the chagrin of Frank Costanza. You also had A-Rod. Remember Griffey Jr. and A-Rod were on the same team along with Edgar? And A-Rod was putting together a great season where he hit tons of home runs and stole tons of bases and hit for a high batting average and had a high slugging percentage. Imagine those two teams met in the World Series. The star power that you identified with those teams. And you would have been able to have the showcase of the two best players of that decade locking antlers in that World Series. If the Giants had won, Bonds would have had his crown jewel moment in San Francisco and maybe wouldn't need to have inflated himself in the wake of all the attention that Sosa and McGuire would get just the next year. If the Mariners had won, not only, and by the way, you also would have had Dusty Baker if the rest of his career went exactly the same, there wouldn't even be a debate. Of course he's in the Hall of Fame. Lou Piniella would be in the Hall of Fame if the Mariners were there. You'd be able to finally have that Ken Griffey Jr. moment in the World Series. But would A-Rod have been, lured into the PED world if he had gotten that championship when he did? There are times when the best players in the game face off. There have been some instances where the MVPs of both leagues played in the World Series against each other. Munson and Bench did that in 1976. And both were outstanding. The Reds happened to sweep it. In 1988, Kirk Gibson and Jose Canseco were the respective MVPs of their leagues. They faced in the World Series, and Gibson only had one at-bat, made it memorable. Oral Hershiser probably should have won the MVP that year. We saw what he did in that World Series. It happens from time to time. You have the George Brett and Mike Schmidt facing off in the 1980 World Series, which turned out to be a classic. These were the two best players of their generation, and they matched in the postseason that one year. And when they matched, they were both in their prime, and one of them was before it all changed. To have that Bonds win the World Series, that team win in San Francisco, would have been incredible. To have that stacked Mariners team win in the Kingdom with A-Rod, with Edgar, with Buhner, with Unit, with Moyer, and especially with Junior, would have been incredible. Instead, we didn't get it. We got that weird World Series that we got. One that Mariner fans could not cherish, and one that still haunts Cleveland fans. Sometimes we don't get what we want, and we try, and we don't always get what we need. I want my superstars in the World Series in their prime. That means a Trout. Yeah, that could mean a Judge. It's more fun when it happens that way. And if that had happened in 97, that could have been one for the ages. But this podcast is one for the ages, and I'm going to be doing, it looks like Javi Reyes and I may be doing one tomorrow, so check that out. And Yankees and Red Sox, quit fooling around. Your big market teams, act like it. And I'm a big market podcast. You can follow us at Locked On MLB Pod. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Telling big market teams to spend and wondering what could have been if the two biggest stars of the 90s faced off and replaced a weird World Series with a clash of the Titans. This is Locked On MLB for the 18th day of May, 2022. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan.